Thanksgiving marks the beginning of the holiday season. So families and friends are gathering around the feast to share staples as well as some less common traditions. And a couple of years back, we gathered some of the Living on Earth folks together to get a taste of those recipes.
And because this is an encore, longtime listeners will hear a familiar voice you haven't heard in a while. Our Beyond the Headlines contributor, Peter Dykstra, passed away in 2024, and we still miss him. But we're grateful for the moments we shared with him over the years.
So sit back, relax, and enjoy this mouth-watering starter course from producer Ainsley O'Neill.
Yeah, I wanted to share my mother's pumpkin soup recipe by way of Martha Stewart. You just cut up, 2 to 3 cups of pumpkin, simmer it with onion, garlic, salt, pepper, thyme, in either chicken or veggie broth. When that's all nice and tender, you puree the mixture. You got to be careful there because it's really hot, so be gentle with it. You return the pureed soup to the pot, and then you add some heavy whipping cream, warm it first so it doesn't curdle, and you serve it. And the Martha Stewart version suggests using a little mini pumpkin to serve it in.
Aww.
But we use mugs so that the family can walk around and mix and mingle before we sit down to the main course.
How cute.
And if anyone's listening to us wondering that they didn't scribble down this recipe fast enough, it can all be found on the Living on Earth website, loe.org. So hey, what's next, Jenny?
Well, I think we've got Naomi Ehrenberg here, and she picks the music every week. So Naomi, you got some cranberries for us?
I've got the reminiscence. I'm from a cranberry growing family. Both my father and grandfather were cranberry growers. And so that's the special part of Thanksgiving for me. You can use them, I think, in almost anything. I've got pie in front of me. And of course, there's the sauce. I make it pure with just cranberries. You don't need to add water in the pot. But you can, a splash of home-squeezed orange juice, a little bit of sugar. Always cut back on the sugar that any recipe has, because you can always add it, but you can't take it out. And so just simmer that away until the cranberries are all popping in the pan, and be sure to let it cool thoroughly and sit for a day or more. And people will rave about your cranberry sauce. And I think that adds a bright, nice color to the table, whether it's Thanksgiving or any other holiday.
Yeah. Oh, man, that cranberry sauce, when it's bubbling away and making those popping sounds, it smells incredible, too.
Yeah, that's great. And I do a version of that. Cranberries, just a little bit of water in the cranberries, and maple syrup, where I am in New Hampshire. Instead of conventional sugar, and it tastes delicious.
And you tap those trees yourself, right, Steve?
Well, we have historically. My mom has. I haven't recently been tapping them, but our neighbors do, and it is delicious. Also, just when it comes to the stuffing, I also put cranberries in the stuffing that I make. I have to confess that not everybody likes that in my family, so I make two versions of stuffing with the cranberries and then those without.
So speaking of stuffing, I think our technical director, Jacob Rigo, who is usually not heard, but he does all the work behind the scenes on this broadcast and podcast, I think he wanted to tell us about stuffing as well. What you got, Jake?
Yeah, a recipe my family enjoys every year is Portuguese stuffing. It's a secret family recipe, but its key ingredient is a Portuguese sausage called chouriço. We never seem to have any leftovers, though, because it's a family favorite.
Ooh, tasty.
That's so good. I've had food from where your family's from around New Bedford, Massachusetts. They put chouriço in almost everything and it makes it delicious. All right, let's turn now to our Director of Advancement and Program Strategy, Mark Kausch, who's famous for playing the double bass in symphony orchestras. But you have something else that's double for us today, Mark, I think.
Yes, double in a manner of speaking, correct. At the front end of the pandemic, I reached out to my dad to say, hey, we're going to be trapped here in Minnesota, just the two of us, my wife and I. Can we have your twice-baked potato recipe? He said, sure. And it actually was one that he'd made up himself. It wasn't something that he found in a recipe book. And the more we got talking about it, the more it dawned on me that basically twice-baked potatoes are kind of like making pizza or making nachos. You can kind of do whatever you want. Bake the potatoes, carve out the potatoes, keep the potato skins as your bowls for later on. And then his recipe mashes in a bunch of butter, some scallions, bacon bits, with apologies to the vegans and vegetarians out there, but those are optional. And then you put it all back into the potato skins and bake it for another 15, 20 minutes. And I thought, well, this doesn't sound so hard. I can totally do this. And I was absolutely stunned at how complicated it turned out to be. And sadly, how I just couldn't quite do quite as well as Dad did with his every year recipe. I'm off the hook now because he's back at it. And I'm looking forward to his version and hoping that someday I'll do as well as he does. So
you'll have to shadow him in the kitchen this time around.
There you go. Good thought.
Dad knows best.
Yeah. Sounds like twice baked potatoes would be enough for a whole meal, really. That could be the main entree.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Steve. And it's always fascinating to me how more often than not, it's the side dishes that are the most fun at Thanksgiving, for sure.
And some of the most filling. Well, I hope you still have some room in your stomachs because our Living on Earth contributor who looks beyond the headlines for us each week is here too. Peter Dykstra, what are you salivating over this Thanksgiving?
Well, I'm not salivating. I'm still chewing on all of the prior recipes that we've heard. But I come from a long line of meat-eating, environmentally hypocritical relatives. My contribution usually is just good old mac and cheese, but with bacon in it. It's simple elbow mac. I tried it one year with gluten-free elbow mac, not realizing that gluten-free elbow macaroni turns basically into mashed potatoes when you try and use it. Cheddar cheese, because you don't want the four cheese stuff, because cheddar cheese will outtaste just about anything. And we top it off with a lot of crumbled bacon. And it's usually the first thing to disappear at our table full of carnivores with occasionally environmentally bankrupt and hypocritical means at the dinner table.
Okay. Hey, Jenny, what about you?
All right. Well, I hope you still have room because I love green bean casserole. And I have to say, I used to hate the stuff that came from a can. You know, for me, it was these green beans that were cooked until death. So they were like gray. And then that can of mushroom soup from a can.
Ugh.
But now I'm completely obsessed with making it from scratch. And Alton Brown has an amazing recipe where in a big cast iron pan, you put all this stuff together and you first do blanch green beans, then you saute mushrooms into a luscious and delicious roux. And then you top that all with crispy thin sliced onions. And it is just delicious.
How does it sound to you, Peter?
It sounds like something I can't eat, with all due respect. I'm allergic to all manner of beans, green beans, pinto beans, lima beans, string beans. So if we eat any of those things in a restaurant, I'll have to order myself an ambulance.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, dear. Well, Steve, we're hearing some to die for Thanksgiving recipes from the Living on Earth crew, but we haven't even gotten to the turkey yet.
All right. You know, only the strictest vegans and vegetarians omit the turkey at Thanksgiving. It's that one time of year where maybe people make the exception. And a succulent, delicious turkey with the right stuffing is amazing. And I learned from my mother-in-law that you can cook a turkey at a very low temperature, just a little over 200 degrees, overnight to keep it really juicy and not have the top of it dry out. And of course, then you put in that stuffing with the cranberries, and it's amazing. As a youngster, where we live in New Hampshire, the neighbor would grow turkeys. And so we would go by, select the live turkey that we wanted, and then it would show up in our kitchen all fully dressed. And it took me a little while as a kid to make the connection. And when I did, I was kind of sad. But, you know, if you're going to eat meat, you got to take responsibility for the process. Okay, well, what do you say, Jenny? You ready for dessert?
I'm ready. I mean, I might be bursting after dessert, but let's try.
Okay.
Kicking us off with dessert, I think we've got Elle Wilson. What have you got, Elle?
Yeah, in my family, we use the leftover pie crust to make cinnamon scraps. All you do is roll the crust into a sheet, cover it with melted butter, and then sprinkle it with cinnamon and sugar. You will wake up, cut it into pieces, and swallow it in the oven. They come out looking like mini cinnamon rolls.
Oh, yeah, that sounds really tasty. I'll have to try that. Now, Sophia Pandelidis, another one of our producers, I think you have a related dessert in your family repertoire. Nespa?
Yeah, that's funny, El. My family does almost the same thing. We roll out the leftover pie dough and sprinkle it with cinnamon sugar, too. But then instead of making it into cinnamon rolls, we actually cut it out in fun shapes like cookies. We're talking leaves or pumpkins. And then we use those little shapes to decorate our pies. So it's fun and tasty.
Cute.
I love that.
Yeah, that gets to play with the nice thing about this feast part of the holiday and getting together with folks is being together, cooking and making things. It's not just a meal. It's a gathering.
Yeah, and it's an artistic process, too.
All right, so we've got all this leftover pie crust. What are some of our favorite pies to make out of that pie crust?
Don't get my mouth watering, please. I'll drip on a microphone. For me, growing up as the daughter and granddaughter of cranberry growers, you can make a delicious open-faced pie, please, because it glistens even the next day. When you first take it out of the oven, invite everyone to circle around and look at this glistening creation. And then the next day, the color settles down. It stays really shiny. It's almost a stained glass window there.
Oh, beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. Too pretty to eat? Nah. It disappears.
Maybe a la mode, perhaps? A little bit of vanilla ice cream?
Yes. Absolutely.
It's my favorite way to eat apple pie.
Any kind of pie. Well, thank you, Naomi. And by the way, speaking of pie, I should mention my grandmother's pumpkin pie, which was part of a very frugal Depression-era way of thinking if they're going to be pumpkins for decorating, they then need to be recycled into the pies that are going to happen at the holiday season. And grandma had a nice garden, probably was a victory garden for World War II at our house, and she grew her own pumpkins. But I guess not all pumpkins are made equal for this sort of thing.
Correct. There is one variety that you often can find just in a normal run-of-the-mill grocery store called sugar pumpkins that are grown to be used in a pie or in cooking.
Probably explains why later in life, when I tried to make pumpkin pie with ordinary pumpkins, they were kind of stringy and watery. Of course, you add enough sugar and you got a pie, but now I know what Grandma's secret was.
So I think we're just about wrapped up here, but we have one more sweet thing to finish this out. Jacob, I think you've got something to offer.
Yeah, dessert that is required for our family's Thanksgiving is a homemade chocolate fudge. You can find the recipe on the back of a jar of marshmallow fluff. It's a delicious mix of sugar, chocolate, fluff, butter, vanilla, and walnuts.
My family, we also always have a chocolate course. Now, we don't make it from scratch, but some chocolates, some clementines, some eggnog is the perfect way to wrap it up.
Ooh, and maybe a taste of rum for some people?
Yeah, it depends what kind of eggnog you're drinking.
Well, Jenny, I guess that's it. So we better get on with the cooking, right? Because this is not a quick meal to whip together.
Yeah, I think this might take a few days to create everything. All this sounds like a recipe for a food coma, for me at least.
There you go. And if you've been listening to us and you're thinking, well, what about... just go to our website and you can see all these recipes there. And if you have any luck, write to us about what works well in your kitchen.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.